Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah, and this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast. Today, we have Gigi Robinson on the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast, and I'm really excited to have her because she's really cool. She's smart. She talks about mental health. She's passionate about mental health. And she is a Gen Z leader and mental health advocate. And she is a leader in her generation when it comes to thinking about these important issues and talking about them in a real way. So really excited to have her on. She was a Sports Illustrated swimsuit model recently. She got to shoot with them on a beach. It was really, really cool. And she's a Swim Search 2022 finalist. I wanted to give you a friendly reminder that this episode and this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp is an online professional therapy service. It is not a crisis line. It's professional therapy where you can actually go on to betterhelp.com and find a mental health professional that works for you. They pair you with someone and you could start speaking to them within 48 hours, which is really awesome. BetterHelp is such a great source, and I want to promote therapy as much as I can because I really believe that, you know, if you feel that you need it and you want it, you should feel encouraged to try it. So if you want 10% off your first month of service at BetterHelp, you can go to betterhelp.com/itsfine. That's betterhelp.com/itsfine for 10% off your first month. I will do a quick peek and pit, and then I will move into the episode. My pit of the week is that I am moving apartments. I'm moving back to the Upper East Side, which is actually a peak, but I think the process of moving is just really stressful. You have to transfer your internet, your Con Edison, you have to get boxes. It feels very overwhelming. So that is currently my pit. And my peak is that I hung out with a ton of friends for the Jewish Festival of Purim this past week, and it was such a blast. We had so much fun, and it was just a really good time. I hung out with a variety of friends, went to a variety of places, and I had a really, really, really good time, and I got to dress up as Kim Kardashian, and then on the Thursday day and night, I got to dress up as Eve of Adam and Eve. So anyway, enjoy the episode and can't wait to hear your thoughts. Hi, Gigi. Why don't you tell us a little bit about like what you do, who you are, how you got into social media, all the things.
Yeah. Well, hi, hello. That's a very it's going to be a long answer, but my name's Gigi. I'm 23 years old. I'm from New York City. I am an influencer, a patient advocate, and I talk about body image and mental health online, as well as chronic illness and also collegiate lifestyle and what that's like since I'm a master's student. I love studying the intersection of social media and mental health and how we can really pioneer an ecosystem online where social media is not something that is a detriment, but more of a tool that we can use to actually live a better life in person and in disconnect and improve our life in real life. So that is just a quick and dirty about me. Born and raised here in New York, went to school at USC, and I love art and filmmaking, and I guess that's why I naturally gravitated towards and landed in social media and creating assets for brands. At first, it was actually like shooting product photography and portraits, and then it turned into me modeling for them. So again, very quick, but I can elaborate on any part of that if you want.
I mean, happy for you to elaborate on any of it. I specifically would love to know like how you got involved in mental health conversations. And like, what specifically do you study? Are you studying that in school?
Oh, yeah. So in school right now, my degree is a master's of science in the integrated business design and technology and the future of innovation. So I know that was a mouthful. And if you can dissect that, essentially, you can really apply this degree to whatever you want it to do, and you can kind of build it however you want to build it. So my emphasis is mostly on, you know, creator economy, Web3, mixed with a little bit of business psychology and, you know, technological psychology of how social media is impacting us and how we can create something within all of these parameters that is innovative. So I know that was like a lot and probably sounded like a little pretentious, but let me know if you want me to like dumb it down even further. But I really started talking about mental health kind of at the beginning of the pandemic, but even before that was when I was really burning out in college. And, you know, I'd always been someone to be like, you know, advocate for yourself, stand up for yourself. But I actually really struggled because I kind of used to let people walk all over me because I was really bad at confrontation and I had no boundaries and would just like, you know, I had this one roommate who would like literally just like turn her light on in the morning in front of my face, like in specifically, and I bought her a bedside lamp instead of like knowing that she would turn on the lamp in the room next, you know, right, that was glaring in my eyes. Mm-hmm. And instead of using the gift that I got her, she decided to use both of them and put the light closer to me. And like, instead of saying like, hi, would you mind not, you know, putting this right in my face, she like goes ahead and it like, I just don't say anything at all. And she just continues and I kind of suffer silently. And that like really did affect me, and I didn't have the tools at the time to stand up for myself. So, you know, talking to different like anti-bullying coaches and motivational speakers and listening to podcasts and also just like therapy really helped me kind of work through a lot of that. And I really hope that nobody has to deal with that kind of shit, because it really sucks, first of all. And second, with my chronic illness, I was dealing with a lot of teachers and friends not believing that I was sick. And that was obviously detrimental to my mental health, because it was making me feel kind of crazy, like something's wrong. No one can tell. No one's believing me. It's affecting my friends. It's affecting my friendships. Like, what's going on? So yeah, that's basically the tea.
Love it. So you're 23, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So you're technically a Gen Zer, yeah. And I am a millennial. I'm 27. And so obviously there are like some differences between our generations. Do you feel that like when you started speaking out about mental health, people were open to it, they were receptive to it? Or did you feel like when you were talking about it, people, I mean, I know you said your teachers were, you know, shutting you down in terms of chronic illness, but when it comes to mental health on social media, like, were you getting pushback, or were people like, yeah, let's do this? Because personally for me, when I was 21, which was in 2016, it was like weird to talk about therapy out loud. It was like very taboo, and I was open about it and people were uncomfortable. So I'm just wondering how that was for you.
I mean, a little bit of both. So in the sense that when I started talking about it, you know, maybe it was like really kind of a little surprising to some people, because I also started really emphasizing mental health and how this technology was like affecting us when I was working on my senior capstone for my undergrad in 2020. And also after going through a lot of mental health challenges like myself, I was just like, fuck it. Other people are for sure having issues and my friendships are being affected. I'm sure other people lost friends during the pandemic because, you know, of whatever situations. Maybe you were just fair weather friends and, you know, you just needed the distance to kind of wake you up to that. And seeing like, oh, if, you know, I were to visit their city, would I reach out to them, or would they see that I'm there and like be begging me to see them? You know, like those kinds of things are definitely some things that I'm more conscious of now. Second to that, you know, I've always been a kind of person that likes breaking tattoos and likes pushing the envelope a little bit. So when I was in high school, and I mean, this was probably around the time of like Aerie's first Aerie Real campaign, where they didn't retouch and they launched it with Iskra. And, you know, I was all about like, yes, like, let's break this down. But, you know, as a photographer, I was trained so technically for years how to Photoshop and how to, you know, pose a certain way and how to, like, you know, smooth something over but make it still look really real, and how to do it the way that, you know, they do it in Hollywood. And after a while, I was just like, this literally doesn't even look like me. Like, I would put them before and after, and it's just like, those are those tools, while yes, for years that's contributed to the beauty standard, like, I was like, I'm gonna change this. So in high school, I mean, I was 17, 18 years old. I was making photos of my friends who weren't models at all. They're just, you know, regular kids.
Yeah.
And taking pretty pictures of them. And it was teaching me the art of photography and posing and building and pulling out confidence from in people, so that, you know, we could create the best image. And then also doing self-portraiture. So I wasn't even just doing it for other people. I was like reflecting it on myself as well. And then that was really well received at the time, because, you know, it was about like a lot of like confidence stuff and like body stuff. But I think the mental health stuff, you know, that's been so recent that it's almost trendy to be a mental health advocate now and like make everything about it. So, you know, it's really interesting. Do these people have, you know, like degrees behind them? Does that matter to us? You know, I think we're also just like kind of still at this standstill where we're realizing how influential every piece of content we consume can really be.
Right.
So yeah. And I mean, I have a lot of goals. I mean, hopefully I can put in some kind of like change the education system from the inside out. I mean, that's my goal.
100%. I love that. Like, I love that you've been thinking about this and doing this for a really long time and pushing the envelope. Like, I think that, you know, I definitely am guilty of being someone who doesn't have more than a psych major and is in this space. But at the same time, my whole thing when I started the podcast was like, okay, this is super taboo. Nobody's talking about this. My first idea for the podcast was in like 2017. And at the time, like, no one was talking about it. Yeah. And at the time I was like, I don't even want to come across as a professional. I simply want to come across as a person who's going through it, and other people might relate to it. And I think like many people have been speaking out about their mental health, and it has been so impactful. But I think at the same time, you're right that right now it feels like, especially on TikTok, to get into like the social platform thing, it feels like everyone kind of wants to have mental health struggles, or like it's cool to say like, I have mental health issues in a way. I don't mean that like disrespectfully, because, you know, 2016, my therapist literally said to me, like, you have clinical, like, diagnosed depression and general anxiety disorder. And I think it's so crazy how it went from being such a taboo, weird thing to like, now it's everyone is saying that they're depressed. And so I want to get your thoughts on like, is the definition of depression changing? Like, are we, I feel, to me, it seems that we're, and I'm not, hold on. Let me back up. I don't want to diminish anyone's struggle. Like, if people are struggling, they 100% should speak out about it. And they 100% should express their emotions, no matter what you call it. I just wanted to make that clear. However, I do wonder, like, because it seems like mental health is becoming more trendy, do we feel like we're kind of glamorizing it?
Great question. I would also preface this with, I am not a doctor and I do not have any medical training as a medical professional. So take what I say with a grain of salt. I think, yes, it's highly glamorized because, first of all, we talk about our emotions, right? Especially Gen Z and, you know, millennials too. We talk about it. We're known as too sensitive. We're known as, you know, really, you know, snowflakes, whatever, for talking about stuff that we care about. And as a result, the pushback we get is what causes us this, you know, anxiety or depression, or, you know, it's the judgment and the
the real kind of like harmful bullying of these older generations telling us you're mm-hmm. wrong. You're supposed to be a certain way. You're supposed to be straight edge. And, you know, maybe it has to do with like your gender identity or your sexuality or your religion or whatever fucking clothes you wear. I mean, like, like people just are going to have an opinion about everything. And I think mm-hmm. especially like the older generation, they're just like confused because they don't understand, but they're also not open to understanding. And therefore okay. to us, it feels like we're not being heard, which is like all we want to do as humans is like be heard, because that's what builds community and connection between people. And that's what really plays into like the human playbook, which is like one thing. The other thing is, it's not just mental health. And something I kind of was, you know, grappling with is I've had chronic illnesses, you know, since I was in sixth grade, fifth grade, diagnosed 10, 11 years old. And, you know, it's been a real struggle. And all of a sudden, like, and I've had to, you know, have accommodations, and I've really struggled, and I've tried to voice it. No one believes me because they can't see it, blah, blah, blah. The pandemic happens. All of a sudden, every single person in the world gets remote access. Every single person gets telehealth, things mm-hmm. I've been asking for years. Other disabled people have been asking for years. People get COVID. They now have chronic fatigue, long COVID, POTS. It's like, bitch, this is literally what I've been doing, like, and dealing with my whole life. And it's almost like a slap in the face, because it's like, why was this not being believed? Because I'm like disabled, and now just like regular people have this. And is that considered a chronic illness now? Yes, it is. And like, I think the other thing is like, are other people going to start realizing that they have it? And I mean, truth be told, 75% of Americans have a chronic illness, which is a pretty big number. And that ranges from mental health to physical conditions to, you know, even like something like chronic allergies or chronic bronchitis, right? Like, mm-hmm. and it's just kind of interesting because, yeah, everyone has something. I just think it's the fact that we're talking about it more that makes it more normal. It doesn't invalidate the direct diagnosis. And you know what? The same way that like brands kind of pivot and remarket and rebrand, I'm sure they're going to come out with a new name for depression. But you go to a psychiatrist, and the hope is that as society progresses, doctors progress too in their research, and they don't base it off like whatever 1960s anymore. Mm-hmm. And they take into account social media, and they're reading studies, and they're staying up to date. And maybe there's going to be new tests, and there's going to be new pharma drugs that are going to help people more. And yeah, I don't know if that succinctly answered the question directly, but I think it was a long story short. Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's a conversation, so it's all good. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I think it's, to me, it's the most incredible thing that like everyone, okay, no, let me backtrack actually, because not everyone has access to therapy. I was going to say, it's the most beautiful thing that we are all encouraging therapy on a more regular basis, and like seeing doctors and whatever you need. Like, I guess what I was saying before, it's like, what are we calling it, I guess? But at the same time, like, it doesn't really matter, because I'm just glad that everyone's thinking more critically about like, what's going on and like checking in with themselves. Like, I'm happy that's a thing, is like the older generations, like my parents are both immigrants. And when they came to this country, you know, no one asked them like, and how are you feeling about this move? Like, they were just like, you just have to like keep pushing forward and survive. And their daughter, me, is like very anxious and always talking about my feelings and always analyzing everything. And they were really confused, and they were just, bro, you're confused, I'm confused. Like, they were really confused, and they were just like, you know, are you okay? And I was like, listen, you're not exempt from emotion. I just think that no one's ever really talked about it this way before. So it's like, I'm happy that this is happening, and I'm happy that we're all talking about it more naturally. I do wonder, like, you know, if we're blurring the lines between anxiety, because it feels like everyone just says I have anxiety, and I don't know if everyone understands the implications of like can't breathe, tightness in your chest, overthinking type of thing, you know, but not to invalidate what anyone has, what anyone's feeling. Like if you're feeling anxious, to you, that's your experience. I don't really know what I'm saying. I'm kind of just talking. But do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, no, that, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think there is a difference between the feeling of anxious and having, you know, anxiety disorder as something that's diagnosed and being on medication for it. Like there's, you know, when you're waiting for some really good news, you're going to be anxious. You're going to be on your toes waiting, right? That doesn't mean that I have anxiety disorder. That's a feeling, right? Exactly. And it's like being used to describe the feeling. So mm-hmm. I think the line, that is the line that's blurred, because people talk about the feeling of being anxious mm-hmm. in a given situation without a formal diagnosis. And it's not necessary per se, and it doesn't invalidate anybody's experience, because everybody's experience is the human experience. So mm-hmm. that is what I have to say on that. And if you're somebody that is self-diagnosing, I would recommend trying to go to a doctor to get the real help that you need, because the truth is, while you might find information that could potentially enlighten you, even if someone is a doctor sharing something online, they're not your doctor and they're not talking directly to you. And I think that that is where some of the problems with mental health content, specifically with licensed professionals, can happen online or with pharma brands, which is why it's taken them so long to integrate into this, you know, influencer marketing ecosystem and creator economy, is because the rules and the line is so fine with how can I share something without giving direct advice to somebody that might mm-hmm. harm them or mm-hmm. might, you know, if a doctor's posting about depression or ADHD, and all of a sudden everybody who watches that video thinks they have ADHD, and then they never have a diagnosis, but they start saying they have ADHD. It's like, where did you get that from, Bob? Like, you need to take a step back and realize that when a content creator, or even if they're a licensed professional, is putting something out, they're putting something out and they're speaking to, you know, hundreds, thousands, millions, tens of millions of people with their content. It's not directly to you, and they're not your doctor. You need to go to a doctor if you think something's wrong, even mm-hmm. if it is something like ADHD, which is pretty normal to have nowadays, right? So I think that that's important. And the other thing is, like, in a way, like, I feel like sometimes maybe people have this like medical FOMO. Like, I know some people that are just like, oh my God, I love life, it's so good, especially with content creation and social media. Like, everyone's always mm-hmm. doing well. And we have these, that's when they're having these super, super high highs. And what's getting more normal now is to show more transparency in terms of the super low lows, because you can't always be, you know, how do I even describe this? We're not like an exponential growth that just like continuously goes up and up and up. It's more like the stock market. Like, I don't know what kind of graph that is, but it's like we're going up and then we're going down. And then we're going up a little more and then we're going down a little bit more. And then maybe we're going all the way up, 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 up. And then we go the lowest we've ever been. And then we go the highest we've ever been. You know, I think that there's like, that's mm-hmm. more a better of an indication of how we can feel with our mental health. And that's what's also normal, especially with social media. And I mean, with my specific platform, I do try to show those low lows, but I always try to add a positive, like, thought leadership, like, flair to it, where I want my audience to kind of take away something positive that they could potentially, you know, try to reframe a situation. Like, there's so much negativity and things like that on the internet that can inflict a lot of this anxious behavior that really kind of like warrants a discussion about not necessarily, well, one, it warrants a discussion about the way that we create and the way we consume. And that's what I have to say.
Beautiful. I completely agree. So tell me, like, growing up with social media, what, in your opinion, like, what's the hardest platform? Like, what? No, sorry. Let me rephrase that. Which platform do you think has had and currently has, like, the hardest, I guess, effect on teens and people like who are growing up right now? Like, which platform is, you know, is worsening our mental health? Is TikTok? Is it Instagram? Like, and why? Because I feel like for me, TikTok is a great way to just like wind down after work and laugh. But I also think it puts me into like major comparison mode. And I just wonder, like, what's it been like to kind of be in school with those platforms and grow up with Instagram? And like, Instagram came out when I was graduating high school. So I'm sure you had it for all of high school. What is that like?
Yeah, well, Instagram came out for me when I was, you know, in middle school. So definitely the age where we're already starting to have our bodies change and, you know, go through changes, and a time where we're already having challenges with our self-image and, you know, maybe also like things like Mean Girls happening, because that's what happens in middle school and high school, or mean people, mean boys, whatever. You know, I want to say social media in general can have an effect on you if you let it. So it doesn't necessarily matter about the platform. It matters about the boundary that you have with it, and where you can draw the line between reality and taking something that a random stranger on the internet who you don't actually know is telling you. So, you know, for us, it was probably watching a lot of YouTube videos growing up, right? YouTube was before Instagram. And I would say in that case, for us growing up as the kids are today, it was YouTube. It then also went through high school with, you know, seeing, for me, it was, you know, I was a homebody. So whenever people would go to parties, I would get like a little bit of FOMO, but I was like, I don't actually like going. So, you know, then it was like, that's where we saw it on Instagram, and on Snapchat, right? And now, I mean, the obvious, it's TikTok, and it's honestly LinkedIn too. I mean, there, especially when you're in college, I mean, I never felt this way because I always have loved LinkedIn, and it's because I use it. You have to also use the tools. You can't let them use you. And I mean, they're using us anyway, but you can't like let it know that, you know what I'm saying? You can't let it have that autonomy over you. You kind of have to like just gain control over how your algorithm works. So if you want your Instagram explore page to be, you know, of plants and cupcakes and motivational quotes, you better be interacting with and searching for and sending and liking all of those things. And that's what it'll be, versus like one of my best friends is a vegan advocate and an activist, animal rights activist. And her account is gory and depressing because that's what she talks about. So it's like, I have kind of like short-circuited the algorithm, and it's kind of cool to be able to do that. And I think you can do that on any social platform. It's about what you interact with. So, and you know, with LinkedIn, I think college students and I guess people in general with this like pandemic, you know, it's, people are talking about their careers and how they make money and how they live life is based on their career and based on how much money they make, which is based on their career, which is based on the company they work for, which is based on, you know, years and years of a company and stocks and all that jazz. But for college students specifically, like at USC, it was definitely a thing where if you got an opportunity, you're taught to post about it and to talk about it on LinkedIn and to network. And, you know, you never know who's going to see it. And like, I always took advantage of that. I was like, fuck that. Like, it's nobody else's business to get upset at me for getting a job. It doesn't make me any less qualified to get a job if it hurts someone's feelings that I got it. Like,
were people getting upset that you got a job?
Oh, I mean, it's more like just like the competition of like, oh, you got an internship at Warner Bros. Or you got an internship at Paramount. Right. Of course you did. Yeah. And like it's not necessarily that they could have been a better candidate or that they maybe even applied. It's right. more so just the fact that I got something that maybe they thought that they want. And then the real problem is I don't know if my generation knows how to
go after things enough. I mean, I'm at the old, I'm like an elder Gen Zer, kind of like similar to an elder millennial, where right. like I'm at the tippy top of it. And, you know, it kind of concerns me with the lack of drive and motivation. Now, this is not a rule and nor is it an exception. I think it's just kind of like, I have people that are Gen Zers that, you know, they're my interns, and if they work for me, they have a high work ethic. That's like something that we talk about it all the time, and they're super involved and whatnot. And there are still kids out there like that, but it's not the majority.
So interesting. I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, at USC, the hustle culture is like, I was saying this earlier, it's kind of about like you're winning to help build the community's credibility further and make something better. So if, like, for example, in 2017, I joined this social media club called USC Reach that a couple of content creators started. They're some of the biggest today. Party Shirt, I don't know if you're familiar with them on TikTok. They're hilarious. And Mark Yan and Alan Chicken Chow and so on and so forth. And, you know, from this social media club, we've been on campus. At first, everyone's like, you know, 2017, 2018. Oh, yeah, video's weird. Those guys, they're going around campus making viral videos. But did everyone know who we are? Absolutely, right? Mm-hmm. So out of a student body population of about 42,000 plus the entire alumni network, which I don't even know how many people that is, people are recognizing us, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we have over 100 members. We have like a dozen or so verified creators that have come out of it. It's almost like an accelerator, right? So collectively, each of us winning at our own niche and our own piece of content helped the club win, which in turn helped the university win because more people wanted to come to USC for our club. So like, wow. That's the culture that happened at USC. And then it's like, how do you stay in your lane and not compare yourself to somebody else? And it's just like the internet, we take things so personally and literally because we believe, I think psychologically, that people are talking to us. That's the psychology of business. That's the psychology of influencer marketing, of super successful influencers. We think that they're talking to us. We think that they, or audience members think they know us, right? And that's just simply not the case. They can't have access to everything. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm totally tangenting here.
But no, it's great. I want to go back to the fact that Gen Z doesn't have as much drive because in my opinion, when it comes to maybe not like traditional careers, but when it comes to social media or being an influencer or content creator, like I'm seeing some dedicated Gen Zers on TikTok, like making these incredible films or like posting every day. And it's like, it's a completely different style of work ethic, but it feels like people are really dedicated to becoming famous. People really, really want that. Is that right?
Well, yes, but like we have to kind of dissect that because, you know, that is a true report right now that most Gen Zers, you know, when surveyed, I don't even know, I think this is outdated. I'm sure it would say a TikToker now, but it was like, mm-hmm. What do you want to be when you grow up? And it's like an influencer or a YouTuber. And I think it's the idea of being someone important as a result of, and everyone in some ways is kind of like sharing their trauma and trauma bonding over the internet, over shared experience that is the human experience, that everyone has some sort of trauma. And I think also the word trauma used to seem super scary to a lot of people. You know, we've really used it in intense situations, but it can be something like medical trauma where you're gaslit by the doctor. That's medical trauma right there. You could have bullying trauma, and that can really affect your mental health too. You can have cyberbullying happen more than ever now. So, and that can happen for being vulnerable, and that can happen for not being vulnerable. I mean, take what's happening a lot of the time with, and this is something I advocate for a lot, is influencers' stance on worldly events and or not pausing and taking a minute to kind of like read the room a little, which – you know, mm-hmm. I also go back and forth on this. Honestly, it's like if you're like a content creator for fun, it's like read the room. If it's your job, it's like read the room, potentially make a statement about it. And you have to be conscious of it, but you also have to like continue to do your job. Like you can't just stop your job the way like,
yeah,
like I mean you could, but like you're gonna suffer the consequences. An investment banker is not gonna stop their job just because of a war going on.
Right, quite bluntly.
Yeah. And a lot of people right now, when influencers don't stop and they continue posting about fashion or they continue posting about something that doesn't, you know, relate to the worldly events right now, I think, you know, people get mad because they're taking it personally that someone that they like doesn't care about a cause that they like. But then it's like, maybe this is just not their outlet and maybe they're not really well versed in it. And you know what? Not all influencers, in fact, most influencers are not journalists and they're not historians and they shouldn't be commenting or really giving advice on these situations. Like, leave that to the reporters. But you know what you can do is amplify it. And it's that key of like amplification and taking that action. And that can be offline, but like people get offended with what people say and people get offended with what people don't say. So mm-hmm. it's like, how are you going to handle that as an individual? And, you know, like with Gen Z, it's, they're dedicated to going viral. I mean, I think one of my little cousins like grew a TikTok account to like more than what I have now by posting the exact same video every single day. Like, for a long time. And it's like dedication. That, right? It's like dedication, but for what? Like, for what if there's no platform, if there's no voice? Like, also, like, it's not necessary. Like, I think the key also thing that these kids are really missing is they want to be famous because it looks shiny and it looks like a get rich quick kind of thing, where they see mm-hmm. a 16-year-old like Charli D'Amelio or a 19-year-old like Addison Rae kind of blow up for dancing. They're like, I can do that. That's fun. But what they don't realize is kind of monetizing that and building that into a community and really delving deep into like, what does it take to build a community? And yes, there can be like younger kids that can grow communities, of course, but do they understand the community playbook of, you know, the human experience? Do they understand what that even means? Can they run multiple accounts that say the same thing? Can they open up a forum on Facebook or a Facebook group where there's advice happening? Probably not. They're young kids. And sometimes when you put young, uneducated kids together, bad shit can happen. I mean, there's a lot of good shit that can happen, but sometimes, I mean, it's just not good. So that's why also I think these kids admire and are trying to emulate what people that they follow are doing.
Right.
So it's a very interesting kind of loyalty love loop of like, we want to keep them addicted and we want to keep them coming back. And in turn, it's like affecting us in good ways because we see the numbers go up, and it's affecting us also, giving us like that validation and, you know, maybe getting noticed. Like, I don't know. It's like, it's very complex.
I feel like TikTok bullying right now is next level. This is something I wanted to touch on. I just didn't know how to transition it, but here we are. TikTok bullying is next level. And you say that you study and you talk a lot about social media and Gen Z. Like, why are people so mean on social media? Like, I understand sometimes people use, being mean about others as a way to get famous and then as a way for people to like find them funny. But sometimes it's just like in the comments and, you know, this person doesn't even have a picture to their name. Are people just trying to like let things out because they need someone to talk to, and this is the best way for them to like let their anger out? I've just seen like next level bullying on social media recently, and it's mainly on TikTok. And like as you said, like YouTube was a thing. There were always mean comments on YouTube. I grew up with that. Same with Instagram. There's 100% bullying on Instagram. But like the TikTok comments just feel meaner than usual. And I don't really understand like what is going on and why people feel entitled. And I, as to your point, it is a bunch of younger kids for the most part who are leaving these mean comments. But like, where is this stemming from? And why does Gen Z, I'm saying Gen Z because for the most part it is Gen Z, like why does Gen Z feel like
good about bullying on TikTok. That's A. And B, Gen Z at the same time is all about mental health and all about speaking out their feelings and speaking out how they feel. But, you know, then you get these like horrific comments online. I just don't really, you know, I'm not sure. I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not a psychologist, so I can't break it down in that sense. But
no,
I
just wonder about your observations. You know?
Yeah, I wonder about this frequently. I mean, again, when they're these young kids, again, like I mentioned before, it's this love loop of if I leave a mean comment on somebody else's page, I might get a reaction which might be better for me than not doing anything at all. It might just be something where they're trying to instigate something, whether that's to grow their own account and get noticed or have the creator kind of like respond. And it's like, oh, did you see I left a comment on this verified TikTokers and they, you know, commented and then a bunch of people follow them. Like, I don't know. I think it's really interesting because some of these creators now, again, have these kind of like, you know, communities where people are their ride or dies, but then they also have people that really dislike them a lot. And I think what's kind of cool about these negative comments is that the platforms actually have filters where you can filter out words. So for me, I filter out all of these nasty words like fat, ugly, mean, bitch, stupid, ugly, like, you know, I filter all of that out because even if it's on my page, I don't want to see it. And that's what I do to set a boundary and protect my mental health. Now, I think there's a serious problem if kids are letting their anger out online, they don't have somebody to talk to, and they're trying to project their emotions onto somebody else. Like, this is a mental health problem that they're behaving this way. Part of the behavior has to do with the accessibility to social media, having it at your fingertips all the time. I mean, we grew up with cyberbullying, but it was all through the computer, not through mobile phones. And that was a difference for us. And that was access. Most of us didn't have access until after hours, after we got home from school. Now these kids have their phones in their pockets all day, at recess, at lunch, like all the time. So they're able to get on there. So it's like parental controls are important for parents to kind of set those limits and make sure the kids can like get, you know, or maybe there's like a phone bin in the household. I mean, I'm not trying to set like a Black Mirror type stereotype here, but it's like something is seriously wrong with the way that these kids are using social media. And I think another really, really big part of that has to do with the fact that there's no education about it as it's happening. I mean, we are researching this right now. It's going to be a couple of years before we implement an actual tangible strategy. I mean, that's one of my goals, is to kind of go into the education system on a federal level and or on a private school level where I can go, for now, go in and get the funding at least to be able to do that, is to talk to these kids about how they're using social media and how they can create these positive ecosystems instead of hurting one another. Because, you know, you would never say that shit to somebody's face. And you know what I would do if I did a thing where it was like, have you ever had a negative thought about, you know, one of your peers right here? And, you know, everyone close your eyes and raise your hand. And, you know, this is a moment where I would have the video recording filming them doing this. And you'll see like who raises their hand. And then you ask, you know, have you ever left a negative comment? And you raise your hand. And you tell everyone to open your eyes. And, you know, that could start some speculation because it's like, oh, what if Bob left a comment on Sue's post and blah, 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 blah. No, that's not the point. The point is, would you say that directly to somebody else, right? And I don't think they really realize that, especially because we've literally been inside most – I mean, I don't know what the situation is with under – like lower education, but like higher education's pretty much been online for the past 2 years. The pandemic's like going on 2 years, which is kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
And because, again, of this access to this technology and these social profiles all the time, we don't have this in-person experience where you cognitively, like, I don't even think they comprehend what they're doing, and they think they would maybe say something like that, but then they don't. And the other thing is they're kids. Not that Not that that should matter. I don't think they should be bullies regardless, because you'd be surprised how many mean people there are out there that aren't kids. But the kids really are the ones that need the education. And on top of that, the school systems need education from, you know, the ground up. And maybe instead of bringing in, I don't know, some rando guest speaker. Like, I don't even remember the guest speakers that spoke at my school. Maybe we bring in an influencer that talks about mental health, and that's more interesting. And it's about evolving with the technology and with the situation of the standard of mental health and like what's happening right now.
That's such a smart way to approach this. I don't know why I actually have never thought about going directly into schools and speaking to them there, because that is where education starts. I mean, also at home. And like, I wonder what parents are saying with their kids. Like, are parents sitting with their kids and saying like, hey, like, you know, I know everyone's on social media, so I don't want to take that away from you, but like, how are you using this? Like, how are you interacting with people? Do you want to talk about it? Like, is there anything you want to talk about online? Like, I don't know what's happening, but it does feel like there must be something lacking at home where kids are just on their phones and the parents aren't really paying attention to how this child interacts with other people when no one's looking. Because if a kid is upstairs and their parents or parent is downstairs and no one's asking, like, my parents used to come up and be like, what's going on? What are you doing? And like, at first I hated it, but in hindsight, I'm grateful and privileged that I had parents who were like, you know, that cared about me and cared about what I was doing and they wanted to protect me. And I think that's a big part of it. But I do think going into schools is so important. My friend is a speech pathologist and she works at a school. And I was like, what are the eighth graders like these days? And she was like, no one has any empathy. She was like, it's so crazy, but like, no one has empathy for each other. They're all saying slurs to each other, calling each other names. She was like, it's crazy. And like, she'll tell someone to be like, you know, go apologize. That's really like not an okay thing to say. And they just don't care. And I'm like, how is this happening? And you're right that being online for 2 years now definitely has had a major impact on like kids' mental health. But I do love the idea of going into schools and actually implementing it into the classrooms. I would love to ask you, like, A, what are you doing on your platforms and like, how can we support you and where can we find you?
Oh, well, thanks so much. This was a really awesome conversation. And I mean every word of this, and definitely expect to see some more public speaking. I'm going to USC. I'm talking to three different organizations there in like 2 days, which is going to be a little bit crazy. But I think it's the start of kind of even taking the first step to talk with college students about it. Because to be honest, like I mentioned, it's not just younger kids. Like mm-hmm. college students are Gen Zers too right now. And that's a little bit scary because, again, they're pretty ruthless. And it's also back to what you were saying before I dive a little, tell you my info is like, these mean comments also have to do with like us wanting to instigate something because we want attention in general. Mm-hmm. And we're just like back to what we talked about in the beginning of the episode. It's like so normalized to have problems, and maybe the people that are, you know, leaving these negative comments are the ones that have the most problems and they don't address them, and it just kind mm-hmm. of snowballs. So
cycle,
you know,
yeah.
It's really interesting. And I hope that also on top of everything I talked about, that in addition to talking to these students face-to-face and creating content online about mental health and about these relationships between social media and setting these boundaries and in our mental health, is that schools really rev up and help provide students with mental health resources, and not just therapy. I mean, I'm talking breath work, I'm talking meditation, I'm talking, you know, exercise classes. Like, it shouldn't be a requirement. It should always be accessible. It should always be there, because those are real world tools that aren't like, hi guys, let's take a stress management class and learn the fucking amount of oxygen you need to be happy. Mm-hmm. Like, no, we don't need that. Nobody remembers that amount. And that's mm-hmm. quite frankly not not valuable. What is valuable is if you take five deep breaths, it's enough to calm your neural pathways and your mind down enough that you can reframe your entire outlook on a situation. And people just aren't doing that, again, because we're always on our fucking phones or on our screens. I mean, I literally do not go a day without being on my screens. Mm-hmm. My phones aside, I'm on my screens every day. So I wanna really try to get some institutions or, you know, environments and education systems to have this stuff be accessible and available to students, because they're the future. So anyway, you can find me anywhere, really. Just Google my name, Gigi Robinson, or you can find me, all my social handles are at It's Gigi Robinson.
That's G-I-G-I. Thank you so much for being here. This was an awesome conversation. I agree with you. And you're great. You're really, really smart. So I am really happy that you were here. Thank you so much. No, really. I was like, wow, she's good. She's really good. really impressed. So
years thank of drama.
What did you say?
I said it's years of trauma.
No, oh yeah. I mean, that's what makes the, I was going to say that's what makes the best, you know, speakers, but that's not always true. As we're saying in this conversation, sometimes trauma leads to mean people, but anyway, thank you so much. And, I'll talk to you later.
Yeah. Bye.
That was my episode with Gigi. As you could tell, she's really awesome, really smart, and I'm so happy that I had her on this podcast. And after we stopped recording, we ended up talking for a while after, just about how we both enjoyed the episode and both enjoy each other. So really happy to make new connections by doing this podcast. As always, you know that you can find me at Sarah L. Sassone on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and the podcast at It's Fine, I'm Fine Pod on Instagram, It's Fine, I'm Fine PD on Twitter. And that's pretty much it. And I'll talk to you later. Bye.